Monday morning you sure look fine. Good morning, NFL fans. Welcome to another episode of Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. We have a little bit of a lighter show for you today. Each passing show in this season so far getting a little bit shorter. I expect that we'll get you in and out of here in about a half hour with the NFL draft. Now, 2 weeks in the rearview mirror, not a ton of stories to go over, but some good stuff, as always, here on Monday Morning Huddle. We're going to lead off with what Patrick Peterson had to say about his fellow cornerback, fellow division cornerback out there in the NFC West in Richard Sherman. Briefly talk about Ray Rice and his press conference that took place this week. In the second segment, we'll get into Rob Goldworm's article ranking the top 17, well, all 17 of the Monday Night Football matchups coming up in the 2014 season. So I'll give you my thoughts on the lineup coming up in prime time on Monday night this year. And then we have the return of the fourth and long segment. Didn't have that in our first two episodes of this season three, but we're going to talk about each NFC team's chances of going to the Super Bowl. Andy Dalton, and is it his last chance in Cincinnati this year, and the likelihood that the New England Patriots trade backup quarterback Ryan Mallett. But let's get to our top story of the week. Patrick Peterson did not have too kind of words to say about Richard Sherman, and I quote off of Pro Football Talk on NBCSports.com, his words were, and they were originally said actually on Arizona Sports Radio, 98.7 FM, "You put Sherman in our system, I don't believe he would last. Obviously, his job is much easier than mine." Kind of curious words to say about a guy that is going to be perennial Defensive Player of the Year candidate, maybe the best defensive player on the best defense of in the NFL last year, and dominated the best offense in last year's Super Bowl. So it's a head scratcher, to say the least. And he went on to say, because obviously the follow-up question is, well, how so? How is his job easier than yours? Well, Peterson went on to say, if you look at their scheme, the Seahawks scheme, and you look at our scheme, he's a cover three corner, period. A lot of guys say he's a shutdown corner, but if you look at film, and guys who understand the game go back and look at film, see how his defense is. I believe if you put him in our system, I don't think he'd be able to last, honestly, because I'm asked to do much more than he is. I'm not going to pretend that I'm somebody that goes back and looks at film and studies Richard Sherman and Patrick Peterson in my free time. I don't. I saw maybe three or four Cardinals games last year, and then, you know, three or four Seahawks games, and then add in the three playoff games the Seahawks played in. So I won't admit to saying that I'm Peterson and Sherman experts, or even admit to saying that I know exactly what Sherman's role is in the cover three in Seattle, in their soft shell, I believe is the word that the phrase that John Gruden would call the Seahawks defense, the phrase he used last year on Monday Night Football when the Seahawks just killed the New Orleans Saints. And I don't know exactly what defense the Cardinals run, but I will say that Richard Sherman is an excellent cornerback. And so what? So what if he doesn't have as much responsibility? Sherman is a shutdown corner in the NFL. He shuts down the other team's number one, and maybe he doesn't shut down the other team's number one every single game, but he is responsible for covering that team's number one. And that in itself should mean a lot. You know, guys like, I'm going to bring up a Steeler in Ike Taylor. Ike Taylor, I'm not not a guy that should be in the same conversation, obviously, as a Richard Sherman or a Patrick Peterson. But Ike Taylor would never get the credit that he deserves because he doesn't get the interceptions. But he, every single year, is the number one cornerback on a top five, top 10 defense against the pass. Richard Sherman, the number one cornerback on the number one pass defense in the NFL last year. Not only does he go up against the other team's number one every single week, he is at the level, in my opinion, of a Rod Woodson or Deion Sanders of 20 years ago, taking away an entire field. Maybe a more contemporary reference would be Champ Bailey, going up against that number one wide receiver and completely taking out not only him, but that side of the field. And it was very effective for the Seattle Seahawks last year. Peterson's remarks, in many ways, I think, can be looked at as him being a little bit disappointed that he hasn't gotten the big contract that Sherman did. Sherman getting the $57.4 million contract. Peterson still under his rookie deal and will be for the next 2 years. It doesn't look like the Cardinals are interested in signing him long-term, at least this summer. Maybe next year. At some point, Peterson is going to get that big payday. So it doesn't, it doesn't sit well with me for him to come out and have all these words about someone that, quite frankly, is the one of the best defensive players in the league, and maybe probably the best defensive player in the NFC West. There, I said it. But you know, Peterson's remarks will make it all that much more interesting come Sunday, whenever the Sunday comes, where we have the Seahawks and Cardinals matching up, which, of course, that'll be twice, being that they're both in the same division. And by the way, the Cardinals were the only team, playoffs included, that beat the Seahawks in Seattle last year. Actually, I think that goes back all the way to 2012 in the last, 18? In the last 18 games in Seattle, the only team to beat the Seahawks in Seattle would be the Arizona Cardinals. So a rivalry. Everybody talks about the Seahawks and 49ers rivalry. The Rams are getting better in that division, and the Cardinals at 10-6 last year, making some noise with some trash talk here from Peterson. That division, as it was last year, but again, will be one of the best divisions and most watched divisions, I believe, of the 2014 season. Now, I said we're going to bring up Ray Rice here in this first segment, and I don't want to talk about him in great length today, but I do want to mention that he had a press conference over this past week about the incident that occurred in Atlantic City back in February, where he allegedly, that's the words that news media have been using, allegedly assaulted his then-fiancée, now-wife. They got married a couple weeks after this altercation in Atlantic City. But my point about it being called alleged, and I do the bunny quotes here, they caught him on video doing this. So unless they can't prove that it's him in the video or can't prove it's his then-fiancée or wife, it's pretty clear that he did this. Anyway, he's going to get away with it. There doesn't seem to be any legal repercussions coming Ray Rice's way. And if it wasn't for this press conference, it probably would have gone away for good. But Rice decided maybe it wasn't him, maybe it was his agent, maybe it was the owner of the Ravens, Ozzie Newsome, the general manager. Either way, Rice had this press conference, his wife present at the press conference, and it just made him look even worse. He wasn't remorseful. He didn't ask for forgiveness, didn't turn to his wife and say, I'm sorry. He just talked about how he failed miserably, and this is a quote that he said during this quote-unquote apology. Ray Rice says, I failed miserably, but I wouldn't call myself a failure, because failure is not getting knocked down. It's not getting up. Okay. There's no I'm sorry in that statement. there's nothing to suggest that he really has any remorse or has learned his lesson from this. And the press conference got even worse when his wife that was standing or sitting next to him apologized herself and said, "I regret the part that I had in the altercation." Why is she sorry? What did she do? She's sorry that she got punched in the face? My God. It just... Look, I have forgiven Ben Roethlisberger, pretty much forgiven Ben Roethlisberger for whatever involvement he had in the Georgia incident a few years ago. Pretty much have also forgiven Michael Vick, as many Americans have. Some have not. Some have held it against Roethlisberger and Michael Vick, but I guess I am someone that has had some forgiveness for these football players that have asked for forgiveness and have forgotten about it, at least, and have respected them as players, I'll say. Ray Rice, at this point, I don't have much respect for the guy, the way he conducted himself in that press conference. But I want to hear what you think. You can tweet at me, DM, HOLCOMB. You can also send me an email if you're not on the Twitter, HolcombMDavid@gmail.com. I'm just laughing. The Twitter, as Craig Ferguson would refer to it as. And I also want to send out a thank you to Tom Pollan, who him and I host a radio show on MTR Radio called I-80 Sports Talk. You should all listen to that every Wednesday and Friday at 7:05 Eastern Time. And it was actually him that brought up the Ray Rice press conference in our last show on Friday, and it was important enough to him to bring it up. It was a topic that wasn't really on my mind all that much. These topics I really try to stay away from unless I feel they're really important to bring up. You know, it's something that maybe other people or other media outlets are not talking about, and I should talk or other people should talk about them. Well, I felt like on this Monday morning that was the case with this story, and Tom was really the first person that brought up that story to me. So I wanted to thank Tom here and plug our show. You should definitely check out MTR Radio. Has some great shows during the week besides ours, but every Wednesday and Friday you can listen to Tom and I talk about all kinds of sports. We're going to take a break here. I'm actually going to Citi Field on Wednesday to see the New York Mets take on the Pittsburgh Pirates, so I thought it was fitting to get a little Billy Joel on the show today. So here's one from Billy. Welcome back to Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. Your host, Dave Holcomb. I want to drop to Twitter again. DM, HOLCOMB is my handle. You could also email me, HolcombMDavid@gmail.com, and find us on Facebook, Dave's Football News. Now, in this second segment, I'm going to get into an article written by Rob Goldworm on FootballNation.com. He ranked all 17 matchups we're going to see on Monday Morning Huddle this coming season, with number one, a little bit surprising to me, going to Philadelphia at Indianapolis. That is a week two matchup. He's apparently very psyched about St. Nick versus the Neck Bearded Prodigy, is how he describes it. So I believe that would be Nick Foles and Andrew Luck is what his nickname for Luck is, the Neck Bearded Prodigy. I have not heard that one, but that one, pretty good nickname. At least fitting, as Andrew Luck has a pretty nice neck beard going. But what I found very surprising about, not his rankings per se, but the Monday night schedule in general this coming year, is there are only three division games on the slate. Now, Washington at Dallas in week 8, which Rob has at number 2 on his list. We also will get San Francisco at St. Louis. I already talked about that NFC West division a little bit in the opening segment. That is a game that really could be huge in that division. I expect St. Louis to be a lot better this year than they have in the past. The only real issue that they're going to have is they're in such a tough division. Will San Francisco or Seattle take a step back? I don't think so. Will Arizona be any worse? I don't know. They seem to be an up-and-coming team, too. As long as Carson Palmer can repeat and have a pretty good season again, they probably will be involved in the conversation in that division. So where is St. Louis in all of that? Can they have a winning record? We'll see. The only other division game on Monday night, Rob has ranked last on his list. The Miami Dolphins at the New York Jets, week 13. Rob says it'll be really boring, probably no offense involved in that game. And although there probably will not be much scoring, I love division games. You know, it doesn't matter who it is. Division games, it's an obvious rival game. The way the NFL is set up today, there are no teams in the same division that like each other. You know, and not that was common before the four-team divisions and four divisions in each conference came into existence, but you still had some kind of maybe unusual matchups or not the cities not really close by. If you remember back to the old NFC West, you used to have San Francisco would play New Orleans twice a year. I mean, who got excited about that when the Saints were really bad? You had the Arizona Cardinals at one point in the NFC East, although at certain points, maybe in the 70s or 80s, the Cardinals were decent and had a decent rivalry with some of those teams, maybe the Cowboys. But in a normal year, did you get excited for Cardinals and Giants? Probably not. But the way the NFL is set up now, I mean, you find me a team or two teams in the same division that don't hate each other. I won't even say that like each other, that just don't despise each other. I mean, maybe if you could find a young rivalry such as the Texans and Jaguars, maybe that would be a division game. Actually, we got that on Thursday night last year in December. That was probably a division game that maybe I wasn't too excited about. But other than that, I mean, give me Bills, Jets, give me Jets, Dolphins, give me Buccaneers, Panthers. I mean, it doesn't matter. A division game is a division game. So I would definitely have Jets, Dolphins, which is actually a really great division game. Those fans do not like each other at all. That is a game I would have much higher up on the Monday night slate if I was ranking these games. I don't want to give away too much of Rob's rankings because I do want to encourage everybody to go and check out his article and his rankings. But real quick, let me list out the all 17 Monday night matchups and the weeks that they're occurring. Week one, we'll have the doubleheader as always, the New York Giants at the Detroit Lions at 7:10, and then at 10:20 Eastern time anyway, San Diego Chargers will take on the Arizona Cardinals. So the Cardinals, talk about them in the NFC West. They're getting some primetime action very early on. It always seems like the Chargers are involved on Monday night the first week, or, you know, Chargers, Broncos. I guess it's very limited on which teams you can have because it has to be a West Coast team. And when you really think about it, there aren't a ton of teams out there all the way on the West Coast. But anyway, week two, Philadelphia Eagles at Indianapolis Colts. We already talked about that one. That's Rob's number one game to watch. Chicago Bears at New York Jets, week three. So the Jets will be involved in a couple of Monday night games. I already mentioned they will be playing the Dolphins on Monday night in week 13. Week four is an intriguing matchup. Two playoff teams from last year in the AFC. New England Patriots at the Kansas City Chiefs. So Arrowhead will have a Monday night game this year. Week five, the Seattle Seahawks at the Washington Redskins. If people remember back to the 2012 playoffs, that's a rematch in the exact same stadium of the wild card game where RG3 ruined his knee and perhaps ruined his career. We'll see how he bounces back this year. Week 6, I already mentioned the 49ers taking on the Rams that week. Week 7, you have a old AFC Central matchup, Houston Texans at the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I'm sure there'll be plenty of mention of the old Houston Oilers in that matchup and the rivalry that those teams had in the late 70s. Week 8 is one of those division matchups, Redskins at Cowboys. Week 9, the Colts and Giants. Would be a lot more interesting if Peyton Manning still played for the Colts, but that not being the case, Eli Manning will play his brother's old team. Week 10, the Carolina Panthers at the Philadelphia Eagles, two playoff teams from last year, so that is another interesting one. Week 11, the Pittsburgh Steelers return, and they will be at Tennessee. Again, maybe some reminders of that old Houston Oilers, Pittsburgh Steelers rivalry as the Oilers became the Tennessee Titans. Of course, these two teams were rivals even when the Titans became the Titans back in the early 2000s, and these two teams were still in the same division or were just brand new or getting used to not being in the same division. I'm talking back Bill Cowher and Jeff Fisher days. Those were some good games. So that'll be renewed week 11 on Monday night. Week 12, the Baltimore Ravens at the New Orleans Saints. Defense, the new Ravens offense, as they have gone much more offensive-oriented in the last couple of years, taking on the high-powering Saints in the Superdome. Week 13, I mentioned already, Dolphins at Jets. Week 14, this would have been a very intriguing matchup a year ago, but with the Falcons coming off a abysmal 2013 season, not so much. But we'll see how the Falcons bounce back this year. They will be taking on the Green Bay Packers week 14 on Monday night. Week 15, the New Orleans Saints come back to Monday night along with the Chicago Bears. That, a rematch of the 2006 NFC Championship game. I wonder how many of those players are still on those two teams. Probably not that many, although Drew Brees did play in that game. Week 16, the final matchup of Monday Night Football. To be honest, if I was ranking these games, would be a contender for number one. Probably would be in the top five. Two teams from the playoffs, both in the AFC, the Denver Broncos at Cincinnati Bengals, a game that many probably thought we could have saw last year. Of course, if the Bengals won their playoff game, they would have played the Patriots in the second round, so they would have had to win two games in order for us to see the Bengals take on the Broncos, because Cincinnati was the 3 seed. They would go to New England, who was the 2 seed. But anyway, this is two teams that are expecting to be in the playoffs again this year, and that could be a preview of a playoff game or playoff matchup in week 16 on Monday night. So those are the matchups for Monday Night Football. We're going to take a break. Here's another one for Billy Joel. We'll be right back with our Fourth and Long segment. Welcome back to Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. Once again, I want to hear what our fans think about the show. You have a comment about anything that we've talked about so far or what's coming up in our Fourth and Long segment, send me a tweet. DM, HOLCOMB is my Twitter handle. You could also send me an email, holcombmdavid@gmail.com, or even drop me a comment on Facebook, search Dave's Football News. So this is the part of our show. We're going to get into our Fourth and Long segment. If you're new to the show, thanks for listening for the first time. Most episodes, I will say about 90% of episodes here on Monday Morning Huddle, are going to have what we call the Fourth and Long segment in the third part of our show, in the third segment. And I'm going to say 3 statements. I'm either going to agree and grunt on Fourth and Long, or I'm either going to disagree and punt. So I got three statements today. Here we go. Number one, I got from an article on the website Football Nation, and it's from Bobby Renaghi. I apologize, Bobby, if I'm mispronouncing your name. I am not very good at pronouncing names in general. Tom Pollan can attest to that. So his article was entitled, Why Every NFC Team Has a Chance to Reach the Super Bowl in 2014. So my statement today, every team in the NFC has a chance to reach the Super Bowl in 2014. And I'm going to change the word chance, and I'm going to say Super Bowl contender. That every team in the NFC is a quote-unquote legitimate Super Bowl contender. Obviously, I'm going to punt that one away. But a majority of the teams, a vast majority, I would even say 14 out of 16, could be a Super Bowl contender this year. The two teams that I'm going to rule out in the NFC that are definitely not going to make the Super Bowl, and watch, they'll end up getting close to making it. The Minnesota Vikings and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers both have new head coaches. Both were not playoff teams last year. Both actually were last place finishers last year. I don't see them competing for the Super Bowl. I don't even see them competing for the playoffs this year. Now, Tampa Bay is a team that could surprise. I thought that they would surprise last year. So I won't be surprised, for lack of a better word, surprised, if they end up making some noise in the NFC South. But Super Bowl contenders, I'm going to say no. I'm also going to say no for Minnesota Vikings. New coach, don't know who the quarterback's going to be. Is it going to be Christian Ponder? Is he going to be traded? Will it end up being the rookie, Teddy Bridgewater? I mean, who knows? We'll see what happens in OTAs and then preseason. Everybody else, I don't want to say on opening day is a legitimate Super Bowl contender, but really would not at all be surprising or unusual if they end up being a contender towards the end of the season. I'm talking Eagles, champions in the NFC East last year. Dallas Cowboys have the talent, never been able to put it together. Could they do it this year? New York Giants have been there before, done that. Washington Redskins, they're a team that is on the bubble. Could they be a Super Bowl contender? It's all about RG3. If he's healthy, they're going to compete in that division. Green Bay Packers, a healthy Aaron Rodgers, kind of similar to RG3. If he can stay healthy, the Packers are a front runner in that division. The Bears have made a lot of noise in the draft and in free agency, bulking up that defense, which surprisingly was the weak point last year. If Jay Cutler can play at a high level with those big wide receivers, the Bears are contenders. Lions, they have a new head coach, but they have all the pieces for Jim Caldwell to put it together. Keep going down the list. The Saints, Super Bowl contenders. Yeah, absolutely with that offense. Carolina Panthers, I really believe they're going to take a step back from that 12-4 spot that they got last year, winning that division and taking the second seed in the conference. But to say that they're not Super Bowl contenders would be premature. Atlanta Falcons, bad season last year, but they have the pieces on offense to be contenders. And then I've already talked about the NFC West a lot today. So Rams, Cardinals, 49ers, Seahawks could all be Super Bowl contenders. Now, I'm basically really using this term Super Bowl contender loosely. What I'm really saying is 14 of 16 teams in the conference could end up being Super Bowl contenders. Will they all be in the middle of the season or in December? No. I mean, teams have to lose games. It's just mathematically not every team in the conference is going to win every game because they play each other, obviously. But it's going to be an exciting time or exciting year for the NFC. And Bobby, his point in all of this about the NFC being the superior conference now in the NFL, no doubt. If you've been a longtime listener of this show, or if you've been a longtime follower of my work, articles in general, one of the first articles I wrote 3 summers ago after the Green Bay Packers won the Super Bowl was that the power had shifted back to the NFC.
finally, I think everybody, and I'm not calling out Bobby for being late on the train or anything. I just, everybody in general, the fans in general, I think are finally realizing how much stronger the NFC is than the AFC. Because if you run down the list of possible Super Bowl contenders in the AFC, it is not even close to 14. It might not even be 7 legitimate contenders in that conference. All right, we got to keep moving on here. Another article that is on the website this week by David Levin. We bring up his work all the time. He's one of the top viewed guys of all time on the website, Football Nation. His article this week, is this Andy Dalton's last chance with the Cincinnati Bengals? The team drafted A.J. McCarron this season, kind of led to questions about, are they grooming him to possibly be Dalton's replacement if he fails again in the playoffs or fails to make the playoffs for the first time in his career? So the statement today, this season is Andy Dalton's last chance with the Cincinnati Bengals. Man, it... Look, I'm going to cheat a little bit here and say I'm on the fence a bit on this one. I'm going to say at this point, no, it will not be Andy Dalton's last chance. He's proven to be a winner in the regular season. You got to remember, the Cincinnati Bengals as a whole are a franchise that haven't won a playoff game since when? 1988? I think was the last time they won a playoff game. It's at least since 1990. That is a long time for no playoff wins. And that's not Andy Dalton's fault. He's been on the team for 3 years, which, by the way, he's taken them to the first time in franchise history to 3 straight playoff appearances. Say what you want that he's not a playoff quarterback. He's only good in the regular season, blah, 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 blah. The fact of the matter is he plays in a division with the Steelers and Ravens over the last decade have dominated not only that division but the AFC, and Dalton and the Bengals have taken over that division. They are the new champ, the new team to beat in that division, and it should remain that way in 2014. So would it be Andy Dalton's last year if he doesn't win a playoff game or doesn't improve this season? At this point, I could change. We'll see what happens. But at this point, no. Dalton is the future quarterback, the franchise quarterback of the Cincinnati Bengals. And our last statement today, we're going to stay with quarterbacks and move to the AFC, well, the AFC South and East, with New England Patriots quarterback Ryan Ballett. The rumors have been circulating since March, but it really heated up a few weeks ago with the draft that Ryan Ballett would become a Houston Texan, especially when the Patriots drafted quarterback Joe Garoppolo out of Northern Illinois. At this point, though, Bill Belichick has come out and said on the record that the team is not the Ryan Ballett trade is not something we're that interested in. So my statement today, Ryan Ballett will not be traded this offseason. Look, it's hard to predict a trade, but I will say this, and maybe you heard it when I said the statement that Bill Belichick said. Now, I don't know what tone he said the quote in, but the way I read the quote from Bill Belichick, not something we're that interested in. That to me means for the price that the Texans are now offering for Ryan Ballett, the New England Patriots are not interested. But if the asking price was correct, if it was something that Belichick was interested in, then he would be interested. So this to me is more of a question of can the Texans and Patriots agree to terms, not a question of the Patriots are set on keeping Ryan Ballett. So I'm actually going to punt that one away and say that Ryan Ballett will be traded at some point to the Houston Texans this offseason. Look, at some point, the Texans are going to look at their depth chart. Bill O'Brien's going to look at his depth chart of who he's got at quarterback
in year one of his NFL coaching career and going to say, oh my God, I got nobody. I got to trade for Ryan Mallett. I got to roll the dice and see what this kid could do in a starting role. And the Patriots are going to get some draft picks, a player, maybe a piece that can help them get to a Super Bowl this year, and a draft pick they can use in next year's draft. It would be a genius move. It just the terms aren't exactly what New England wants yet. That's why this trade hasn't happened. But if I was to say if it will or not happen, if will it or will it not happen, I will say I'm leaning more towards yes at this point. It will happen this summer. That wraps up our fourth and long segment. Going to give you one more from the album The Stranger, and then we'll come back and wrap up today's show. Well, they showed you a statue, told you to pray. They built a true temple and locked you away. Ah, but they never told you the price that you pay. The things that you might have done, only the good die young. Man, I really got to see that guy in concert. Welcome back to Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. One more time, the Twitter handle, DMHOLCOMB. Send me an email, holcombmdavid@gmail.com, and follow us on Facebook, Dave's Football News. If you don't have a football comment or question, send me a Billy Joel question or comment, recommendation even, because I'm trying to see him, wondering if I should see him at MSG, fork over the $200-$250 it'll be to see him at the Garden and kind of his natural habitat. Or I have a chance to see him at Washington, D.C. for probably a third of the price. If there are very loyal Billy Joel fans out there that listen to our show and love New York or MSG, let me know if it's definitely worth the price to see him there, if I should go see him somewhere else or in D.C. Anyway, I got you out of here in almost a half hour. We're now coming up on 40 minutes here pretty quickly. But one more recommendation that I want you to check out on our website from my dear friend, Cooper Allen. He has a list that comes out every year, top 100 football players going into each season, kind of similar to what NFL.com does every year, or NFL Network, I guess the one and the same. But Cooper Allen has now started his own list, and he released the first installment of that last week. And he ranks players 100 to 81. So it's going to be a five-parter. And I'm not going to say any of the players on this show where they are, but definitely check out Cooper Allen's work, his work in general, and definitely his top 100 list that will be coming out in five installments. We're going to take a break on Monday Morning Huddle. Not another song here, but we will not be back next week. I know it might be complicated to follow, but we're not going to have a show next week, but the following Monday, which will be what? We're already into June. It's hard to believe, right? That'll be June 9th. That is the next time we will have a Monday Morning Huddle episode available up on Football Nation. So stay tuned for that and check out all the other articles that I referenced in this podcast and all the other articles up on the site. Good stuff to read as we're waiting for OTAs to start. And, you know, sooner than later, preseason will be opening up, or training camp, I'll say, will be opening up in July. But in the meantime, everybody have a great Memorial Day. I hope you're outside listening to this podcast, or you already had a great Memorial Day, maybe listening to this at work on Tuesday or Wednesday, and hopefully not getting caught by your boss listening to me. But anyway, have a great day, great week, catch some sun, and in the meantime, until next time, I'll go and try and find some peace in my mind.